There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5. Good to talk with you distinguished colleagues on this Wednesday afternoon. Heck, it's halfway on to the weekend at this point, right? We've got the second half of this show on a Wednesday, and really, in reality, weekend starts early if you're going to get out and fish the 85th Annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. We get started with the Liars Contest on Thursday night, and then the cannon shot and the fishing gets cranked up on Friday. Dalton and I were just down at the rodeo site earlier today, getting the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit set up down there, and it was a sea of activity. It was a busy place as they were getting everything ready for all of us to show up over the next 3 days, Friday and Saturday and Sunday, and of course Liars Contest and musical accompaniment from Thursday night on through Sunday. All right, so we'll talk more about that in a bit. I want to check in with my buddy Brendan Kirby with LifeZet, also Yellowhammer News, and a man who's going to tell us why what I hear President Trump say, Brendan, is not what he means. Is that right? Is that what it is?
Well, you know, I well think maybe what President Trump says is what he means, but there's an interesting contrast between what he says and what his administration actually does.
Okay, does, yes.
If you look at the president's comments.
Well, he says he's the toughest president ever on Russia, right? He's the toughest president ever on Russia.
You know, and that is typical Trump hyperbole, of course. But, you know, if you look at what the administration has done, it's hard to really see what Putin got for his investment in the 2016 election. If you look at Trump administration policies and whether or not they benefit Russia, and you can go all the way back. Of course, we imposed sanctions on Russians and kicked out diplomats. You know, you could say that Trump really had no choice with regard to that because there was a veto-proof majority in Congress. But he also agreed to sell lethal defensive arms to Ukraine, which very much is not in Russia's interest, and it's a step that President Obama refused to take. That's rather tough. And then even things that don't have to do with Russia per se particularly, we pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. That's something that Russia helped negotiate and is very much in favor of. We bombed Syria, which is something, if you remember, the red line that Obama laid down and then lets Assad cross without doing anything. That is one of Russia's biggest allies in the region. Bombing the Syrian regime is not something that Putin would favor, presumably. We pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, which is another international agreement favored by Russia. And perhaps most importantly, the Trump administration has supported building up the U.S. military and developing domestic energy resources, which is the one commodity that props up Putin and his regime and allows Russia to project power beyond its borders, is high energy prices. So adding to the global supply of energy through domestic production is not something that would be in Putin's interest. So, you know, it's a really strange dichotomy between Trump's, seeming to coddle to Putin or surrender or, you know, whatever some of the overtime rhetoric has been, and the actions. And I don't really have an explanation for it, but it's just curious.
Okay, as always, there's a lot to talk about here. On the left, and there, you know, from yesterday's discussion on, I said, you know, get a discount a lot, whether the left be somebody elected like a Chuck Schumer or just, you know, the screaming throngs that would complain about whatever President Trump does. I try to discount them from the discussion, and I try to discount the people that that nothing could have happened with President Trump that would be wrong. And I try to gather everybody else in the middle and say, what's really going on here? And, you know, the people saying, oh, this is another Pearl Harbor, it's Kristallnacht and all that stuff, they need to be punted. That's ridiculous. But did this hurt the Republic going forward? This discussion we've had, you and I have had it, I've had it with Cameron Smith as well, that is there not individuals? It's not that President Donald Trump is criticizing, you know, former CIA Director Brennan, but it's the executive branch criticizing the U.S. You know, U.S. intelligence agencies, and over time, this is seeding this continued inflation of people's mistrust of government. Maybe some people think it's a good thing, and it's about time. Maybe some people say it's gone too far. I mean, is that part of this, that it's really not even specifically about what happened there in Helsinki, but it's a bigger story, and it confirms for some people, or bothers for others?
Well, first of all, I think a lack of moral clarity and a lack of direct messaging can be dangerous. And, you know, I think it's right to fault President Trump for that. You know, wars have been started because of miscalculations made because, one country's was sending mixed signals or not clear enough signals. You think back to the first Gulf War, reportedly Saddam Hussein thought he had a green light to invade Kuwait because our ambassador to Iraq at the time was not clear enough in her conversations with him that would be something the United States would not tolerate. So I think that's fair criticism, and I think seeming to equivocate is not good. When it comes to questioning the intelligence agencies, though, I mean, my gosh, when did liberals all of a sudden think that spies were beyond reproach and beyond questioning? I mean, just seems weird given our history over the last 40 years, where it's liberals and civil libertarians were the ones that questioned the actions of the CIA and our intelligence agencies,
sure,
which have enormous power. And
I figured in
the shadows and secret.
Hence, I figured you would call me or text me and give me grief. Who's standing next to President Trump on this one? He's not always on the same side, but you got Rand Paul saying, no, I hear what the president's saying.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, I don't know if you heard Rand Paul on the Laura Ingraham show today.
I did, yes.
Just ripped John Brennan. Reminded everyone that he actually led a filibuster against John Brennan. So that was way back when. That was not, you know, some response that just came up. Rand Paul's been fairly consistent on this. As with everything else Trump, it just seems like Trump will say something or do something where criticism is completely valid and worthy, but everyone seems like they have to out-Trump Trump.
Yeah.
And then the rhetoric escalates, and then you start getting serious people suggesting that Trump somehow committed treason because he said things at a press conference they didn't like. I mean, that's just preposterous, and it undermines, you know, criticisms that really are valid. Trump's performance was not good. Let's face it. I don't, you know, not many
there's a problem. You
was,
just you just put your finger on it. This is what I talked about yesterday, talked about again today, that it's the tough thing because we're all going to go to the shiniest object. The shiniest object will be those that say that the president committed treason and this is Pearl Harbor, this is crazy, just ridiculous stuff from the left. And then there's those, their counterparts. I don't think there are as many. I don't think they are legion like the people on the left against President Trump, but there are people that no matter what happened yesterday, you can't express that you were disappointed by what was said at the Helsinki conference because that means you hate Trump, you know, 100%. I definitely think that this egg is shaped, it's fatter on the liberal side here against him, but there are two voices that are the shiny objects everybody's talking about when, like you said, instead of having a discussion of, you know, what do we think here? The president might have meant this. He had to go walk it back yesterday. Either he was not telling the truth the first time or he's not telling the truth the second time. But what does this do to our intelligence agencies and their relationship, you know, with not President Trump himself, but the executive branch going forward? What does this mean for the American people? I mean, there are bigger stories here than just some kind of inflammatory rhetoric.
Yeah, and it's not like this is some sort of a secret thing that was sort of cooked up where Trump ran as some sort of Trojan horse as this big Russia hawk, and
right.
then flipped when he got in or something. I mean, he was pretty open from the very beginning back to 2015 that he thought that we should have better relations with Russia. He publicly questioned whether we should still impose sanctions on them. He laid it out there. We had a campaign and he was elected. So it seems to me the proper response is if he does something that you think is too pro-Russia and you don't like that, or you think that we should be tougher on Russia, is to have a debate on those issues and try to win the next election. But when you say this is treason, this is as bad as the start of the Holocaust.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, you just, come on. I mean, the beginning movement of a campaign that led to the murder of 6 million Jews is not the same as saying things that you think are too pro Putin. I mean, that's just not you're not credible when you say things like that.
Yeah, except you're not credible, but you end up, seems like you get TV time. What do you do? I'm coming right back. More with Brendan Kirby. He's with LiveSet, also Yellowhammer News, author of Wicked Mobile. We'll find out more on that. If you want to pick one up for a beach read here, I'll tell you how to get it. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on a Wednesday. By the way, so I was asking y'all yesterday, I said, hey, if you get a chance, you don't know what you're going to do for lunch, just stop by and see my friends at Goldfingers. Right, and because I told you I've been to the Goldfingers on Dolphin Street. Although the food's the same in Saraland, I just haven't been to the Saraland one. I've gone to the one close to me here, go to the Goldfingers on Dolphin Street. And I mentioned that the big deal for me was, as I'm trying to do healthier, trying to do better, I was trying to stay away from fried foods as much as I can. I mean, I'm not going to be, completely perfect, but trying to stay away. And a lot of places where you can get great fried chicken, they will also say, hey, we have grilled chicken. They do, but it just doesn't taste really good. They haven't been, okay, Goldfinger's the exception to that for sure, because of seasoning on there, the way they char-grilled the whole nine, the way they look, it's really, really good. And thank you from the text line. Somebody yesterday said, thanks for the introduction to Goldfinger's. I eat there weekly now. I had the Hawaiian chicken wrap today, which is superb, and you have the grilled chicken on that. Somebody else who said, I gave it a chance, and yes, grilled is not as good as fried, but it's 90% there. Hey, that's all we can ask. That's honest interpretation. Because I agree with you. The fried are delicious. But if you're trying to do right, and you're going to go grilled, and it helps you go grilled when they're good, check them out at Goldfinger's on Dolphin Street and in Saraland. And while you're there, of course, you've got hamburgers, and you've got the great salads, and you've got the corn fritters, and you've got, listen, they can do catering. They got all kind of food items. But first thing, just for me, if you're like a chicken finger fan, go check out their grilled chicken fingers. They're really, really good. All right, back to our conversation with Brendan Kirby from LiveSet.com, also Yellowhammer News, and the author of Wicked Mobile, which, by the way, still in print. I saw it out there the other day, so people can still pick it up here in town, or if they want to go online.
Well, that's good news. Sometimes the readers know better than I do, because I don't get daily updates on who's buying what. So you can get it online at Amazon or Barnes and Noble. You can get it in person at the real live Barnes and Noble store, at least the one in Spanish Fort I've seen. And I like your idea, package them with the snack food.
That's right. Yeah, some Andy Capp's hot fries along with Wicked Mobile. A couple questions coming in here. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to finish up some thoughts, and then I'll get some of the questions off the text line. But your point is, and your story over at Lysette, is that you're comparing rhetoric with actions? Is that basically, you said there's a contradiction there?
Right, a big contradiction. I interviewed a foreign policy expert who generally likes the Trump administration policies, does not like the Trump administration rhetoric. And he said, he paraphrased the famous quote that has been attributed to Mark Twain about the German composer Wagner. I'm told that it's a lot better than it sounds, which he used to describe the Trump foreign policy. He said if you didn't listen to what Trump says and you just looked at the policies, they're pretty solid. We have moved to punish Russia with sanctions. We've kicked diplomats out of the country. We've sold lethal arms to Ukraine to step up pressure on Russia for its invasion and annexation of Crimea. And then beyond the direct confrontation with Russia, the administration has made a whole host of decisions that are not in Russia's interests, even if it wasn't directly targeted at Russia, which is things like building up the U.S. military, withdrawing from the Paris Climate Change Accord and the Iran nuclear deal. Those are both international agreements that Russia favored, pursuing more domestic production of energy.
Have we lost? Do we lose connection? All right. Well, we'll tell you what, Dalton, if you work on that, we'll try to get Brendan back on with us. I don't know what happened. That was very abrupt. It wasn't this thing about digital. It doesn't fade out like an analog. It just all of a sudden is there. Let's go to the phones here. And Bill is in Mobile. Hey, Bill.
Yes. Hi. Yeah, there were a couple of statements that I wanted to make. One was the statement about how the Democrats are and the media, they need Russian meddling, they need Russian collusion for political purposes. And I think in the midterms, if the Democrats lose, or even if they win, but especially if they lose, it will be used to try to delegitimize the electoral process. And the other thing too is that I think that the base of the Democratic Party, even though they're getting more radical, I think that the center of the country and certainly the right of the country are starting to move further and further away from the Democrats. The Democrats, because they need Russian collusion and focus on that instead of what their constituents need, economics, other policies, I think that they are attached to this Russian collusion to such an extent, I think they do so at their own peril and will marginalize their party if they have electoral, if they don't win.
Bill, do you think that's, because there's a couple different levels of this, right? Do you believe there was Russian meddling in the 2016 cycle?
Well, I think it depends on how we define it.
Okay.
What is the definition of Russian meddling?
Did they attempt to monkey with the system? Did they attempt to prefer give one candidate their help? Although it's come out in some stories, it looks like they get different day, they prefer different candidates. But do you believe that they had something? They didn't sit on their hands. Is that fair?
Well, I think that with regard to the Concord Company, well, there's two things. One, there's the Concord indictments, what I'll call the Concord indictments. The second part are the 12. That Rosenstein made public before the meeting there, the summit. With regard to the Concord issue, I think that that was mainly a hire type deal. I think that a lot of campaigns use bots that sometimes their location is outside of the country. I think that may there may be meddling there, but I don't think that was a state actor. With regard to the GRU people in the complaint, I think, again, that also is political. Did they get into the DNC server? Well, they also tried to do the RNC server. Was there favoritism? In that indictment, that 12-person indictment, they also talked about the GOP there, the RNC.
Right. So, but what I'm getting at it is the baseline is, yes, they attempted to do something, right? And the argument is, is it to prefer one over another? How is it? But you do agree they were attempting something.
Well, I mean, I think that... Yeah. you know, many, whether it's China and their espionage in Silicon Valley, or whether it's Mexico flooding the country in some ways has electoral decisions as far as how the Electoral College is made up. I think that all countries, Saudi Arabia certainly, the Ukraine definitely, I mean, this is par for the course, and I think this is exacerbated because the politics of it.
All right, Bill, and I appreciate it. I think we got Brendan back on. Brendan, could you hear any of that through your end? Could you hear what Bill had to say?
I heard it, and I mean, my judgment on this is, look, we just, everyone is kind of going by what they've been told by our intelligence services. There hasn't been any real public accounting, laying out specific evidence, because that's not the way, spy work goes.
Right,
so
right.
Just based on what is publicly known, the case seems pretty compelling to me that Russia did, in fact, try to monkey with the election. It seems like their initial goal was just to stir things up, and then at some point they decided they were going to try to help Donald Trump. I think that it seems pretty likely that happened.
All right. I hate this, but because of the technical issues, we lost the majority of our time. But I do want to give you a chance to direct people if they want to read that story or others, or even a discussion of the Ag Commission and Industrial Commissioner runoff. You have that at Yellowhammer, and where else do they go?
Well, that's up at Yellowhammer. Of course, national politics you can read at lifezet.com, and hit me up on Twitter at Brendan K. Kirby.
All right, man. And we will we'll be talking about this more, of course, going forward. Coming back after the break, a discussion of this is interesting, as we've had a series of books on the show over the years, different authors that have written about history and how it affected Mobile, or how Mobile played out in history. And Paul Bruski, in his book, The Last Siege, does that about as specifically as you can. It says the Mobile Campaign, Alabama 1865, Civil War history, and how it applies right here in our neck of the woods. He's got an event coming up tomorrow night and also over the weekend. We'll talk to him about the book and when you can go out and talk with him. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 136, FM Talk 106.5. Glad you're along, and good to talk with this man. I heard a little bit of his conversation last night about his book, The Last Siege, and I want to get more information. But I also want to point out, too, not only an author and obviously historian, also the head coach of the University of South Alabama's track and field program, Paul Bruski, joining us now on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, no problem.
So what do you do? You do a little research, and then get the kids to run, do a little research.
I've been working on this for quite some time. Between recruiting and coaching and everything else I have to do, it's not a whole lot of time, but I would just set aside a little bit of time, to work on this. Whether, let's say we're on a bus ride home, and on the bus I would, kind of chip away. If one time I was in New Orleans for a track and field meet, and stopped at I went out earlier for the team and went to Tulane Archives and got a bunch of stuff from them, and then just work on it when you can, just kind of chip away at it, and that's basically what I did.
Well, as we look at this, I think back to just histories of wars and the waning days of wars, be they ancient wars or fairly modern wars, they seem to get less attention. Now, here locally, we all, talk about what happened. We know Blakely, and people talk about the lost Appomattox there, up on Highway 45. But this was laid out here in your book about the Mobile campaign. This was something that took over a year, and it was not over with the Battle of Mobile Bay. That was just the start of this.
No, I mean, the Battle of Mobile Bay and then the subsequent Mobile campaign, that was approximately 8 months apart. And there was the whole Tennessee campaign in between, and in the latter stages of the Atlanta campaign. The Nashville and Franklin, that happened in between it. So it was quite a long time before Mobile was actually captured. It's true that the Battle of Mobile Bay sealed the
sealed the port to blockade running and gave the Unionists possession of Dolphin Island and Navy Point or Fort Morgan and Fort Gaines. And those later became staging camps for the subsequent invasion of Baldwin County.
So, but you're saying 8 months' time. So 8 months' time, Union in control at the south end of Baldwin County and south end of Mobile right. County. But at the same time, Mobile's still Confederate.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying Mobile was still Confederate. I mean, at the same time, they were pretty close neighbors for the Union Army and the Confederates.
Right. And it's interesting that a lot of the Confederate troops were camped south of the city of Mobile, approximately where Brookley Field is, where the old Gulf Pines golf course is, in that vicinity. And they would look out into the bay, and they could clearly see, the gunboats of the Union Navy, menacingly out floating around out in the bay in clear sight. So, the city remained in Confederate hands until April 12th, 1865, and the Battle of Mobile Bay began on August 5th, 1864, and it was about the 23rd of that month.
So with your research into this, here are the Confederates in that camp looking out, seeing the Union gunboats. I mean, I guess you would wake up every morning and figure, well, today's the day that they'll launch the attack.
Yeah, there was a lot of anticipation. You'll see that a lot in the newspaper articles of the time. You know, General Maury, who was in the command of the defenses of Mobile, he was criticized for being, somebody called him the Lord of Panic, because he was constantly desperately seeking reinforcements and thought that the attack was going to come at any time. But that was a big thing. In fact, it's interesting, there was an attack on the U.S. Escatora, which was a U.S. gunboat out in the Mobile Bay in early 1865. Maury just couldn't stand watching these guys, menacingly float around in Mobile Bay, so he sent somewhat of a submarine attack against it. It failed, but it was it definitely happened. They definitely attempted to sink a ship out in Mobile Bay. It just didn't work.
But I mean, I imagine though, I was listening to you last night that Maury would have had some reason to panic because he was outmanned and outgunned.
Right. The odds, not the odds, but the disparity in numbers were vast. During the actual siege, the Confederate defenders of Mobile, there wasn't really more. There was less than 10,000, probably more around 9,000 Confederates in all, and that's in the surrounding areas as well. And the Union Army under General Canby, that's over 45,000 troops. Not to mention over 20 Union naval vessels that were in Mobile Bay, including six ironclads. So, they were up against it. There's no doubt about it.
How long in this process are the citizens of Mobile still in the city? I mean, to what date before did they evacuate?
They did. Well, they encouraged all non-combatants to leave, and many did, but a lot did not. An awful lot did not. So they, it's interesting. At night I have a lot of accounts from citizens where they would go to Mobile River to the docks there, and they would watch at night. It's like a fireworks display going on at Spanish Fort, which they could clearly see from the city of Mobile. And I have other accounts where they would go in two- or three-story buildings and look out from the roofs or the top windows at the fighting going on across the bay at Spanish Fort. They could clearly see that, and they definitely heard all the excitement. The citizens of Mobile were very supportive of the Confederate soldiers at Spanish Fort and Blakely. There were numerous soldier support groups that were formed where the women would prepare care packages of different items, whether it's food or other supplies, to send over to the garrison at Spanish Fort and Blakely.
As you're watching this, I can only imagine in your research, you're sitting in Mobile looking across the bay, you have to know that, if it can be successful there, they're going to swing to the west next.
A lot of animosity, not animosity, but anxiety, because, the people that lived in Mobile knew what happened in Georgia with Sherman's march, destructive march through Georgia, so there's a lot of uncertainty of what exactly is going to happen once, if and when the city fell to Union forces. So a lot of anxiety of not knowing exactly what was going to happen in Mobile, especially having read the terrible accounts of Sherman's destructive march through Georgia. I mean, that was fresh on their memory.
We're talking to Paul Brewski, the book, The Last Siege, The Mobile Campaign, Alabama, 1865. And you got events coming up, too, where people can come out and meet you, talk more about this.
Yes, sir. Actually, tomorrow night, anybody who, you know, would like, it's free to the public. I'll be doing a brief lecture and book signing at Blakely, historic Blakely Park, where the last major assault of the war took place. Great park if you've never been there. But I'll be doing a talk at 6 p.m. Gates open for free at 5:30. And that'll be at the Wiley Center, which is located on the grounds of historic Blakely Park. And then again, I'll be back in Mobile. I'm going to be in New Orleans this weekend doing a talk. But on August 2nd, I'll be back in Mobile at the Oakley Mansion. I'll do a talk called Interesting Tidbits on the Mobile Campaign at 5:30 p.m. at the Oakley Mansion on Thursday, August 2nd.
I got to ask you this, because a friend of mine just texted me this, and this is, I'm embarrassed that I don't know this as a, you know, Mobilian here. He said, Paul, are you aware of Wallace Turnage, who would be the, and we're just talking about the Union being set up in the south part of Mobile and Baldwin counties, and Mobile still in Confederate control. He said, if you are aware of Wallace Turnage, the only slave to escape going south instead of north, said he was taken into the Union on the Mississippi Sound off Cedar Point. I just went through there today. Gave them the recon of the city of Mobile before they invaded.
Yeah, there's all kinds of little accounts like that, neat little tidbits like that. I'm not, I don't know, I've heard of that, but I'm not real well versed on that that episode. But yeah, there's all kinds of interesting little accounts like that, and I feel like I've included quite a few of those, you know. One of the things that was kind of amusing to me, and it you know, you've talked about this before, and I've seen it in the papers about the oyster beds that used to be in Mobile Bay, particularly around Cedar Point and Dolphin Island. And the Unionists, after they gained control of Fort Gaines, you know, they used that as a staging camp, and have numerous accounts of the Yankees going out into the Mobile Bay and, you know, scooping up oysters by the, you know, bushel. I mean, just by hand, just wading out knee deep in the water. Conversely, the Confederate cavalry that was patrolling Baldwin County, these guys, a lot of these guys fought in the defense of Atlanta, and when they were around Atlanta, they were basically starving and eating hardtack, maybe some bacon if they're lucky. So they come down to Mobile, the 12th Mississippi Cavalry, who I'm talking about, and I have some accounts of this, and they said all of a sudden they're fishing and scooping up oysters on a daily basis. So basically, they're having seafood buffet on a daily basis until March 17th, when the Union gunboats preceded the marching columns up Baldwin County. They started shelling the shores of Baldwin County and drove off the cavalry. So that did it for the seafood buffets.
Wow. Yeah, that is a tidbit. I mean, something I didn't know about. And I just wonder, do you have enough accounting in your research to get the spirit of people or accounts? Because I wonder, are you in Mobile? Obviously, the communication system isn't anything like it is now, but do you realize that the war is not going well for the Confederacy? I mean, if you're one of those soldiers that's tasked with defending Mobile, I mean, it seems like, you know, in the waning days.
I think I've included the sentiments of both sides. You know, I would generalize the sentiment of the Unionists as overconfidence, and they really believed that as soon as they showed up, you know, near Spanish Fort, that the Confederates were just going to fold their tents and get out of Dodge and evacuate right away. They didn't expect any resistance, and I've seen that from numerous accounts from Union soldiers, and they were in for a rude awakening because, despite being outnumbered anywhere from 10 to 15 to 1 at Spanish Fort, depending on, it's hard to pinpoint the exact number just because of troop transfers, the Confederates at Spanish Fort put up a heck of a fight for nearly 2 weeks. And one future governor of Minnesota, who was a colonel, a Union colonel here, he wrote a letter to his aunt saying he was astonished by the level of resistance that they it was totally unexpected. So the Confederates were definitely the guys who actually fought here were for the most part diehards, bitter enders. They weren't giving up without a fight, and you know, that would be kind of my description of the Confederates. The guys who are here, the deserters had pretty much deserted. The guys who were fighting here, these guys were, with the exception of Thomas's brigade, who were mostly young boys and maybe some older men, the guys that fought Mobile, and these guys were brave as well, but these guys who were here, these guys were your bitter enemies, these guys who were very devoted to the Confederate cause.
Remind folks once again, I mean, events coming up where they can see you, like tomorrow and then in August, but if they want to go online, maybe they can't make those events. Where do they get more information about the book? Maybe pick up the book.
Yeah. Well, anybody's interested in the subject, I have a group page on Facebook called The History of the Mobile Campaign. It's a private group page, and, you know, just send a request to join. We'll add you there, and that's lots of pictures there, and has information on the book. But also on Amazon, and Casemate is the publisher. They can definitely purchase the book online there as well.
Paul, we appreciate it, and best of luck with your events coming up. Paul Bruschi, and we'll put a link up as well. The book, The Last Siege, The Mobile Campaign, Alabama, 1865. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad you're along. A text line popping as well at 343-0106. And remember, if you want to share, like this interview, different things we do on the show, podcast available by going to the front page of fmtalk1065.com.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
At 153 FM Talk 1065 at Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Hey, y'all. Sean Sullivan. Glad you're here. And we'll do it all again tomorrow morning with Mobile Morning starting at 6. I want to say this. It's now come out. It's public. And I want to go ahead and say thank you. To all of y'all that made this happen. It wouldn't happen without y'all. The Nappy Awards list is out from the folks over at Lanyap. By the way, they said total votes cast over 1 million in this year. Over 1,075,000 plus votes in the Nappy Awards. Wow. And y'all were very, very kind in the awards. The three of them here to talk about real quickly, and then we're going to talk some Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. But I want to say, number one, thank you for the Best Morning Show Award, Mobile Mornings. We won for Best Morning Show because of y'all. Also, I love this on so many levels because it's fantastic that you awarded this, and it also gives me something to give my friend Kelly Finley grief about, a DJ whose voice leads you to believe you may want to see her naked. Kelly Finley has won that. And also, kind of a throwback to last year, your favorite Lanyap cover image of 2017 was the image when we won Best Morning Show last year, and we got posed up down there at the Battle House in our best duds and posed up around the piano. That one favorite Lanyap cover. So big thank you to y'all for making that happen. All right, let me head south where I was a little bit earlier today, my home away from home, Dolphin Island, and talk to Justin Thompson with the JCs and the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Man, y'all were working like it was like a it was a like ants in a construction site. There was a lot going on today.
That's right. We're getting set up. We had a several of our vendors showing up today. People starting to set up in the sponsor tent. We're getting ready. There's a lot to get done in the next 2 days.
y'all are very busy as you put on the planet's largest multi-day fishing tournament. Yeah, it doesn't come easily. So let's talk about for us, the fishermen or us, the people who want to come out and check out the fish and the music and all that. Give us a little timeline here on what's going on, what people need to be ready for, what day, and walk us through the weekend.
Yeah. So everything will kick off Thursday evening with the Mossy Oak Liars Contest. We'll start with the Liars Contest, and we'll also have our captain's meeting at the rodeo site and captain's meeting at J&M. They'll both be synchronized at the same time. They will be at 6 o'clock, I believe, Thursday evening. At the captain's meeting is when you'll be able to buy the Synergy Laboratories King Mackerel Jackpot tickets and the Raymarine Big Game Jackpot tickets. Those two jackpots are only being sold at those captains' meetings and then overnight at the rodeo site until 5 a.m. at Cannon Blast on Friday. So that kind of starts there. We'll have the Rolling the Hay Band after the Liars Contest on site. And then Friday, 5 a.m., we'll be shooting the cannon off, and all the tickets got to be bought before then. But we'll shoot the cannon at 5 a.m. and fishing can then begin. Friday evening, we've got the Molly Ringwalds live on site. That's a free concert, free parking, no ticket to get in, nothing like that. So all our music all weekend is that same way. No entry fees or anything like that to come enjoy the music and come see fish and enjoy the rodeo site.
Yeah, and so many details on your website. I do want to add this, though. One of the new things this year, that Craneworks Red Snapper Jackpot, and while we had some bad news in the Red Snapper fishing world, it will not affect y'all here because the whole way through the end of rodeo, Red Snapper still, we can still catch and retain them.
That's correct, yeah. So, of course, that news came out, I guess that was a day or two ago, and of course, we got complete explanation from Alabama Marine Resources Director. We talked with him, and he even sent us an email, you know, guaranteeing us we are good. Nothing about our tournament is compromised by any means. So yes, the Craneworks Red Snapper Jackpot is probably going to be even bigger now.
Yep.
People know the last weekend they could fish for snappers. So that's an online only ticket. It can be bought on our website adsfr.com. Click the ticket link. But it's a per boat ticket. Not every single person has to buy that jackpot ticket. They each have to have the open competition, but that is it. So they buy that $150 boat ticket, covers everybody fishing on the boat, and it's based on only 100 tickets purchased. We're looking at a $6,000 cash payout for first place, and we're still going to pay the top 10 also. So I mean, there's a lot of money going out there to that jackpot. And as that ticket number goes up, that price goes up.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's going to be huge for all the reasons you just listed. And before we wrap up here, remind folks, too, I saw those beautiful boats sitting in the rodeo site today. What's the story on those?
That's right. Yeah, we've the 22-foot contender with a 250 Yamaha motor on a sport trail trailer. It's rigged up, ready to go. We've got Castaway Customs completely did the interior of the boat with C-Deck. Every flat surface on that boat is covered in C-Deck. It is really cool. It's got some prints built into it. It's got the rodeo logo on it. It's got Contender on it and things like that. It's really neat. Then we've got that's a random drawing of any angler that weighs in a fish. So all you've got to do is buy an open competition ticket and catch any of our 30 category fish and come weigh it in and get a random drawing for that.
Good stuff. And more details, of course, at adsfr.com. And we'll check back in tomorrow with the crew down at the rodeo site. And we're taking the show down there on Friday. More details coming up. I got to hop out of here. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.